Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. A warm welcome. It's good to see you. My name's Phil Topham. I'm one of the staff at the FIEC. It's a joy to see so many people gathered at this conference and indeed for this seminar this afternoon. This seminar is called Help My Church is Changing. What do we mean by that? Well, I think all of us would say, to one level or another, our churches and our communities don't look the same as they did 10, 15, 20 years ago. Things are changing in our culture. The Lord is sending people to our communities from around the world. We are seeing different people living on our doorsteps than we have in the past. And even churches, like my own context in Market Harborough, which has been historically a very kind of white, middle-class area, we're now seeing more and more folk from around the world making Market Harborough their home. That is changing our community, and it's changing our church and what it looks like. So the idea of this seminar is to think through how we can respond wisely to that and how we might serve one another in our churches as we think about that. And there's really going to be four elements to this time together. First, we're going to hear from Tim McMahon from SIM. Tim is going to give us a kind of theological overview about why intercultural ministry is biblical and rooted in the scriptures. And then we're going to hear stories from three churches that are going about this ministry in different ways. And my hope and prayer in the way we've planned this seminar is that there'll be something in at least one of those stories that resonates with your own experience. And we can hear from how these three FIEC churches are engaging with intercultural ministry in their context. So we've got Alan McKnight from Harper Church in Glasgow, Lucas Quaylo from Sunbridge Road Mission, and Debbie Dixon from Cornerstone Church in Nottingham. All of these churches are embracing intercultural ministry in different ways, and we look forward to hearing what we can learn from each of them. So why don't I say a prayer, and then we'll dive into our content. Let's pray. Father in heaven, thank you for the opportunity to gather this afternoon. Please would you use this to glorify the Lord Jesus in our churches. Father, we long to be a community of believers that reflect the biblical mandate of Revelation 7:9, where every tribe, tongue, and nation worships around the throne of the Lamb, our Lord Jesus. So please would you help us to think this through wisely this afternoon. Pray this would be a helpful time together. And Father, as we think about sort of moving this dial a little bit in our churches, would you watch over us and help us, we pray. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, let me just start with a little icebreaker for a couple of minutes. Turn to the person next to you and just have a quick conversation about what your community is now looking like or what your church is now looking like and how that's different to 5 or 10 years ago. Then we'll do a quick bit of feedback before I hand over to Tim. So 3 or 4 minutes to have that conversation with somebody next to you. Thank you. Okay, let's come back together. So can anyone kind of share in 30 seconds? Let's see if we can come up with some common themes. Who's going to be brave? And I'll bring the microphone over. Okay, thank you.
Andrew Binns from Halifax, Grace Baptist Church. I think we've over the past, our church is 186 years old, and when it was formed, I jokingly say they probably didn't have any Lancastrians in it. Though they may have walked over from Rochdale or something like that. But now we're about 60 members with representatives from about 10 nationalities. So that has probably come about. Some have been there for a good number of years, but for the most part, I would say in the last 5 years. So that's, yeah.
Yeah, that's a common experience, isn't it? Thank you. There's a hand up over here. Thank you.
Hello, my name's Mark from Elmstead Lane Baptist Church, Chislehurst. We were predominantly 10, 15 years ago, white middle class church, though we border a very affluent area, but across the road is a couple of estates, so people, low working class people. Just over the last 5 years, really, a little bit before that, maybe we saw some diversity coming into the church, people from different cultures and backgrounds. But now we've got about 27, 28 different nationalities in within, 4 or 5 years. So,
It's encouraging that this is what we're seeing across the country. It's not just sort of a perception, this is what's happening. Let's have one more before we go to Tim. Thank you.
Hi, my name's Mark, and I'm from Inverness, as you can tell by my accent. And my congregation has not changed. It's monocultural. It's all white. It's lovely. And I add a splash of color.
Thank you very much. Well, as I said at the beginning, I hope that the stories we hear from our churches will help each of us to move the dial. And the idea is we're not trying to go from A to Z today. We're going from A to B or B to C and just moving this along slightly. So my hope is you'll take something away from here that you can use in your context. And we're going to leave time at the end for questions. So I'm going to hand over to Tim and he's going to work through the material for us. Thanks, Tim.
So intercultural church, I'm going to start with that and we're going to work backwards. We're going to look at church, culture, and then what does the inter mean? So what defines a church? Now, I love the Bible's use of the word ecclesia, which just means a gathering or a meeting. And in Acts 19, when Luke uses the word, he describes three things. One, a very formal assembly, when the governor says, you can take this up in the courts. At the other end of the spectrum, he describes the riot because of the goddess Diana that they were protesting about. He calls that riot an ecclesia. And then there's a quiet group listening to the governor as he speaks. Meeting or gathering is all that church means. What makes a meeting, or what defines a meeting, what gives it its purpose? I want you, in your just next to the person next to you, pick anyone or a couple off that list and say, what is a meeting of people, for example, in a football club, what's their purpose? What do they have in common? So chat at, or any of the others on that list. So do that for 2 minutes. Now, I won't ask you to comment. But what I want you to do now is to discuss what's the common purpose of your church. Go. Okay, wind those up. Now, we're not going to discuss this now, but I want a number of people just to shout out in a couple of words, like 3 words maximum. If you had to say one of the purposes of your church, what might they be? Glorify God. Who else had that? Quite a few. Great, thank you. Make Christ known. Others have something like that?
Reach the lost.
Reach the lost. So evangelism. Mutual encouragement. Church family. Upholding the truth. Equipping the saints.
Be Christ's bride.
Be Christ's bride. Now, all of those, the focus is Christ or God, isn't it? Glorifying him, bringing honor to him. All the ones that we discussed before, there would have been something about their connection with the football team, for example, that all the club members are wanting that team to be glorified. I used to live at Leighton in East End of London. They were in the fourth league at the bottom, and yet every other Sunday you would hear coming from Leighton Orient Stadium, we are the champions. The incongruence between those two things. But that's what you do. If you are a meeting, a gathering, you're glorifying, in our case, the Lord Jesus. Okay, so that's a church is about glorifying or exalting the Lord above, fill in the blank. Culture. What's culture? Well, you'll often see this diagram, the culture iceberg. And there's the obvious things we identify with when we talk about culture, those common practices that are shared by a group of people, the food, the dancing, the national dress, etc., etc. But underneath that, there is unseen things, but very important, going all the way down to the level of values and putting all that together as a worldview. And the cultural iceberg has at its heart shared patterns tied to identity. Now, I think this is a useful definition, if you like, of culture, rather than just talking about the different things that make up a culture, because there's something about cultural things that contribute to our identity, who we are, what we're for, what our purpose is. And that's why culture is difficult when you bring it into a church context and ask, how does our attitude to culture interact with our attitude to glorifying Christ? Now, culture is anything that you default to automatically. if you don't have to think about it, if you're asked to which side of the road do you drive on, most people in this room, I think, automatically will drive on the left. But when you go to Europe and then you automatically look to the left for danger, but actually the traffic's coming the other direction and you can miss it. And I remember the first time I drove in Europe, I had to keep telling myself, look to the right, look to the right, look to the right, because I automatically look to the left. So culture is that which you automatically default to. You don't normally have to think about it. And it's also something you feel in response to. So it's not just something out there. It's something that when it's not done properly, the way you expect, you feel that things are not right. And so we put a value judgment. It's right or it's wrong if things aren't done the way I would expect. So therefore, we naturally want to be in a place of comfort. And anything that's going to bring a change in our culture, the things which we naturally are predisposed to, which feel right, we're going to be resistant to change unless we put it up there and say we have a greater purpose to live for. When we have a greater purpose, then we're willing to make changes. So one of the key things we'll find as we hear about the intercultural churches here are these are churches where people have embraced the importance of change because they have a higher value than just personal comfort. And lastly, discomfort can bring fear or even a sense of threat. If something is so different to what we are used to, we can have a visceral reaction to it, an emotional reaction. And we have to name this and we have to identify it. It's no good just saying to people, well, you ought to change because of Christ. Well, of course, yes, people will agree with that. But you need to deal with what's going on inside. And so one of the great things that has to be done if a church is to become more intercultural is to expect to deal with strong feelings and emotions and to bring the truth to bear on that so that we don't dispose of those, but we're willing to bear with the discomfort because of a greater joy. So that's at the heart of what intercultural church is. Shared patterns tied to identity. Okay, what about multi and inner? So when we say monoculture, we talk about a group of people who share similar patterns, okay, and a commonality. I want to suggest to you that we are not as monocultural as we often think we are in our monocultural churches. Every family has its own culture. It's not exactly the same. Your family, even if you are coming from the same ethnic group and socioeconomic class, etc., as the person next door to you, there'll still be things about your family that's different to the family next door. So people are used to dealing with difference in family contexts. What we're seeking to do is to say, is leveraging that ability to accommodate change beyond just the normal grouping to accommodate change from people from different cultures. So monocultural groups with some differences, but who largely assume commonality. Multicultural, I would say, is when you have groups living alongside each other. And what's their purpose in a multicultural context? It's just peace. It's harmony. It's not necessarily deep interaction. In fact, it's just mutual tolerance so that we can get on and live our lives. Intercultural is different. The clue is in the word inter, to interact, to engage deeply. Without losing the cultural identities, but to be bringing blessing to and receiving blessing from those with very different cultural identities. And the churches we hear about today will, to some measure, know and have in their experience what that looks like. So I love this image where Jesus says in the Sermon on the Mount, in the same way, let your light shine before others that you may see that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. And Paul picks up the same image in Philippians and speaks about the churches shining among the pagans like stars in the sky. A church's purpose is to exalt Christ above all. That's what we came up with in our discussions, but including above all cultural identities. And so an intercultural church is going to be one where we are consciously saying we're not going to let our culture, as important as that is, trump our commitment to make Christ known across all cultural divides. Now, each church is going to look different. If you look at the star through a telescope, you will see colours. I didn't realise this till I looked at the night sky through a telescope. But stars are not all the same. Now, have a guess as to what causes stars to look different, different light, different glory. Well, it's, as you'd expect, it's about what they're made of. If stars are made of different chemicals, and it's also to do with their size, they shine with different colours. Every church is unique. It has its own combination of people that the Lord has brought, their own particular cultures. No church is like your church, and no church will ever be like your church. It's not that we all have to become like a certain church, but rather that the principle of having Christ glorified above all else, including cultures, will work itself out in a particular way in your particular church. And you're asking God to lead you in doing that. So that's what intercultural church is. Now, you can map out for yourself where you are on a scale from mono at one end, multi in the middle, to intercultural. And there are some tools available that you can use, we can make available after this. What's the biblical mandate for it? Well, I mean, there's lots of places you could go in the scriptures for this. But the Tower of Babel, where the earthly city starts, and if you remember that story, it was probably founded by Nimrod, and he called all people to come and to speak one language and all to be together. And you know what the Lord's reaction to that as they sought to make a name for themselves. He dispersed them. Go to the end of the Bible, and God then calls out in the next chapters of Genesis, Abram. And he calls Abram to leave his family, leave his place of origin and go, and he is not seeking to build for himself a place to draw others in. The whole of Abraham's life is lived in tents as he goes to the place that the Lord wants him to go. And in the book of Hebrews, we're told it's because he was looking forward to the heavenly city whose foundations would be established by God. And we then go through the Pentecost when we come to the New Testament, where in a sense it's a reversal of what happened at Babel. But it's not a reversal because not everybody speaks in one language. What happens? Everybody hears the truths of the glory of God spoken in their own language. Now the glory of Jesus is spoken in all languages so that everybody in their own cultures can hear of Christ. And that happens three times. It happens with the Jewish disciples at Pentecost itself. It happens then when Philip preaches to the Samaritans and they are given the gift of tongues so that they hear the glories of God in their languages. And of course then when the Greek-speaking Jews from Antioch go and share the gospel in that region and people hear the gospel in their own language. You cannot get away from the fact that God is ultimately upholding the diversity of different cultures. He does not see them as a barrier to glorifying Christ. He does not want us to return to Babel where everyone speaks one language. The final picture in heaven, of course, is in Revelation 7, verse 9. After this, I looked, and John saw before him a great multitude that no one could count, from every nation, tribe, people, and language, standing before the throne and before the Lamb. They were wearing white robes and were holding palm trees in their hands. And they cried out in a loud voice, "Salvation belongs to our God who sits on the throne and to the Lamb." That's what heaven looks like now. Jesus being exalted by people from all cultures, backgrounds, languages, and tongues, upholding him. And what is church about now? On earth, as it is in heaven, as we are seeking to move from the earthly city to the heavenly city. So churches reflect heaven. And is this just aspiration? Well, if you look in the books of Paul's letters to the Ephesian church, where he calls on Gentile believers now being one with Jewish believers, and they put down all the barriers that were between them so that they might glorify Christ together. And if you go into the New Testament and look at the churches, we learn lessons from all of them. From Antioch, as they were willing to cross language barriers in order to take the gospel to Greek speakers. In Galatia, when Peter has to be rebuked by Paul because he was going to start going back into only having table fellowship with his own people. And we're reminded there how difficult it is. Even the best leaders struggle to stay being intercultural. In Philippi, as we heard a couple of times in this conference now, how Jew and Gentile, slave and free, male and female, they were the members of the first church in Europe. That's no accident that Luke records that. In Corinth, as they dealt with all sorts of issues, Ephesus, as they held up the truth in the place where the goddess Diana lived, and Rome, with all the names, both Greek and Latin, Roman names, as well as some Jewish names that Paul mentions. So I just want to finish with this. What are our blind spots in achieving this? Now, I am colorblind. Anyone else here know that you're colorblind? Okay. I cannot see the numbers here, but can you tell me what's the number in these slides? Okay. I can't see these. 29. It's blank to me. 6. Right, I can't see any of those. I'm red, green, colorblind, and those slides are set up to show. So, sorry, if you just found out that you're colorblind and you didn't know it, that's a free consultation. I won't charge you. But if you can't see something, you don't know to fix it. I found this in married life. Until I become aware of something my wife wants, I didn't even realize it was a problem. Now, I'm sure you can relate to that. We need to recognize that we will not see things unless we become intentional about it. So one of the big jobs you have to do in a church to help become intercultural is to raise awareness of culture. And there's all sorts of things that you can do. If you don't, you'll end up holding a cultural supremacy mindset. You will sort of feel that biblical truth is defined by my church, that my commitment to comfort means I'm not willing to make sacrifice. But when there's something greater to live for, you're willing to make sacrifice. You can put aside some of the discomfort you experience. You're even willing to fear losing control because you trust our glorious Lord, who's the good shepherd of his church. And that's where it really bites, is when you actually have to start appointing leaders who are not from the culture that you know so well and asking leaders to stand down to make way for them. Can you trust Jesus, the Good Shepherd, to do these things? Ultimately, we will be blessed as we become more like the sorts of churches on earth that is already gathering now in heaven. Okay, there's various areas for constant growth. We'll talk about more of these. If you want to do further on the back of this seminar, there's training that's offered.
So Alan McKnight is going to join us and tell us a bit about how Harper Church in Glasgow has been on this journey. Brother, the floor is yours.
Good afternoon, everyone. My job is to just tell you a little bit about how Harper Church has changed over the years, the journey towards intercultural church that we've been on. I think it's a never-ending journey. Things keep changing over and over again. And it's not in any way to say this is what you should do, it's just our story. And if any of it's a help to you, then that's great. Back in 2012... Harper had a Sunday morning attendance of about 90 people, and every one of them except one Congolese family were white Brits. The church was experiencing a bit of decline, an acknowledgement that change needed to happen. This year, we have about 250 turning up on a Sunday morning. 50% of those people are born outside the UK, from all different nations. There's large groups of South Asians, Iranians, substantial numbers of Central and South Americans, and a whole bunch of West Africans. And really, I just want to tell you the story of how that came about for us. Five areas to think about in this route map, or the journey route map. First is considering the demographics, learning about the community, embedding a new culture, embracing who God brings, and making room for one another. That's essentially our story. Right back in 2012, 2013, we began to think about the demographics. We found ourselves in a situation where we were a almost completely white church in Scotland's most ethnically diverse area. Our local primary school, which is 150 yards from the church door, it was 50% non-white at that point. It's now 95% non-white and 80% Muslim. So we had this church that was essentially all white, except for one family, in this massively ethnically diverse area. And that poses at least one question, and that's why. Why is that the case? Why are we an all-white church in such an ethnically diverse area? And so we began to think about that. We began to take action to learn about the community. So we commissioned some demographic analysis and community profiling, trying to understand the statistics in the area, what communities and groups were in the area. And we began to learn about Islam, because that was the most dominant group in our area. We started doing courses called Friendship First, which helped to encourage our people to understand a bit more about Islam and about Muslims and about how people think and act who come from that culture. We invited the mosque leaders to come and visit our church. We filled the baptism tank, laid out the communion table, and just told the gospel around each of these points. They then invited us back to the mosque, and we went there and had a look at what they were doing, just to try and learn and demystify some of that as we were learning more about it. We began to connect with local businesses and local community groups and tried to do some projects that brought them all together, just to gain a bit of an understanding of what the community was. I think our biggest learning point from all of that was that there was no such thing as the community. There was a whole lot of different communities, all sorts of fractures and distinctions that meant there were a whole range of different communities in our immediate geography, and that one means of reaching the community was never going to be a viable option. We had to find different ways of reaching different communities. We then began a process of rethinking our culture and spending time thinking about vision and values and mission. As the elders and deacons went away and then consulted with the church and thought through all these key things. And then we spent the best part of a year preaching through the values that we had identified as being values that we thought were important. There's a whole range of them on our website, but two that are important for our journey towards intercultural church. The first was that we reach into change and grow. So we were trying to say that change is now a permanent feature, that we were going to be continually changing, things were going to keep changing, and the desire to have things always the same was in some way holding us back. By that, we don't mean we were going to change doctrine or change our commitment to the gospel. That was firmly clenched tightly in our grip. But everything else could change, because the community was continuing to change and life changes. So there was a kind of recognition that needed to happen, and people got behind that. The second thing that was key for us is that we acknowledged that we were essentially an all-white church in a massively inter-ethnic area, and we identified as a value that we reach out to diverse communities. And as we tried to teach through what that would look like and why that was important, we had four things that we keep coming back to over and over again. We reach out to diverse communities because it's God's plan, Genesis 12, because it's Christ's command, Matthew 28, because it's essential for our health, 1 Corinthians 12, and because it reflects heaven's glory, Revelation 7. So we come back to this every few years, just trying to remind folks that this is why we're embracing change. We looked at our mission, and we identified our four E's. We want to engage with all the communities around us. We want to evangelize all the communities around us. We want to establish disciples in those communities and equip disciple-making disciples in those communities. And we set about trying to have distinct approaches for specific communities, rather than just a kind of one-size-fit-all, here's how we do evangelism. We tried to tailor it to the communities around us to pick up on this realization that there was no such thing as the community. At that point, we then just started to wait and see what God would do. In the first couple of years after going through this process, there was a trickle of people from different cultures and backgrounds. We saw blessings in other areas, but there was no great transformation. But unbeknown to us, as God was preparing us to be ready to reach out to people from different backgrounds, Glasgow City Council was doing a deal with the UK Home Office, which saw 3,000 asylum seekers per year coming to our exact area. It was the initial accommodation area. So very quickly, people started to come along, and God had been working in us and through us to equip us to be ready to receive those people who came along. And so we had lots of asylum seekers from different places. We ran community meals every Tuesday, so people would come and be fed, and we'd connect with them there, and then invite them to English classes, and then invite them to Bible read-through groups, provide practical support, helping people with clothing, with furniture, all those kind of things that were building friendships. And alongside that, telling the gospel, inviting to courses, finding tools that would help. So a course called Al-Masira helped us greatly with those coming from Muslim backgrounds. So just finding new things, new ways of handling that. We saw not only asylum seekers coming, but migrant workers then started to appear. Indian tech workers, Nigerians who had come to work in the care industry, and they started to arrive. Then international students decided that we were a decent place to come to, despite us being quite a bit away from the universities, because that was something that they liked. And then the thing that confused us slightly is that as all the internationals started to come, we started to see more and more Indigenous Brits coming along as well. Really, the kind of final thing to say is about making room for one another. That commitment to change was really important for us, because it meant that we didn't have to spend 3 months of discussions and consultations, 2 deacons' meetings, 4 members' meetings, just to decide to put up some signage. We were ready to act and move. So when the first Iranians came, within 3 weeks, we had a rudimentary translation thing on the go. It really was just the person who had the most English sitting in the corner translating for the ones who had no English. Now, it wasn't brilliant, but to my mind, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. So the person who did a bit of Farsi was able to give some information, and then we would find a new way of doing it, and we've maybe changed our translation system 4, 5, 6 times, and it's never been easier now with AI to do it. So just moving quickly to provide translations for the different groups that came along. We now translate into Farsi, Spanish, Punjabi, and Polish, I think it is at the minute. And there's now a demand to do it in Portuguese as well. You know, so it's just finding ways of solving these problems as they come along. We put up all sort of PowerPoints in multi-language. If we use PowerPoint, it'll be in the main languages for people to see. The signage around the church is all in different languages. And over the years, we've been experimenting a bit with intercultural singing and embracing different styles. I think if you'd come to us a few years ago, and maybe even still now, we would be fairly recognisable for a normal mainstream FIEC type church, plenty Getty Town End, that kind of thing, you know, but just kind of straightforward FIEC church type stuff. But we've experimented with singing other songs in different languages. Maybe the best way to see it is to watch it on the screen, and you'll get a wee sense of what we do. Basically taking songs that are well known in our Scottish culture and then flipping out a verse and putting it in a different language. Now that video was taken near the beginning when we were doing it, so we had folks out from the different language groupings leading us, but now we're at a stage where the music team just carries on, and you hardly see a dip in the congregation when you move from English to Spanish or English to Punjabi or English to Farsi. So it's come a long way in that sense, and we don't do that all the time. We might do it 2 or 3 times in a month. So it's not that this is how we do everything. It's about making space, making room. The Farsi speakers love singing in Farsi. The Spanish, Latin Americans love to sing in Spanish and enjoy the fact that we are doing that with them. Sometimes we'll have someone come and pray, and they'll pray in English and they'll pray in Spanish, or someone come and read the scriptures in the two languages. And we've also been experimenting a little bit with style as well. So we now have an African choir, and you can hear a bit of them as well. Now, it's quite something to watch if you're on the platform like me, because you look down and you've got all the Africans giving it this, and you've got all the Brits like that. We haven't quite gone full intercultural with all of that kind of thing. And one of the singers came to me just a few weeks ago, actually, saying, "Pastor, why are you not clapping? We want you to clap." And I had to explain to them that I cannot clap and sing at the same time. I physically cannot keep the rhythm and sing at the same time, so I had to make a choice, and I chose singing. So they were fine with that once I'd explained it wasn't any reticence to try. I just couldn't do it. So again, there are all sorts of stereotypes you could go to, but I'm sorry, that's the reality. I can't do it. So really just making room for one another, trying things. And it's not that we're doing Farsi every week. It's not that everything's in this language or that language. It's more just a sense of, here's a place where people care about us, here's a place where people are making space for us and trying new things for us. We try and make sure that our teams are intercultural, so the welcome team will have people from, although it's an interesting one, the line that we're given is we want the welcome team to look like the church. So that should look like male, female, it should look like different ethnicities. But if I turn my back for 5 minutes, you come back and it's white week, brown week and black week. You know, so everybody just got, I say, no, that's not what we want. No, we want to mix it all up. But everybody wants to be, you know, with their friends. You know, so it's constantly having to pull it back towards that intercultural reality rather than just defaulting back to being with people like us. I think that's caused us to recalibrate in the past year on intercultural church, because we were finding that the Urdu speakers wanted to hear the word in their heart language. The Latin Americans wanted to hear it, the word in their heart language. So we enabled that by having different fellowships that would meet every couple of months, worship in their own style, hear their own language. But that was beginning to feel to me as though it was pulling us back towards, you know, the idea of having different congregations for different languages, and we don't want that. So we pulled it all together into something that we called Night of the Nations, where the groups would be in different parts of the church doing their thing, and then we would all come together at the end to eat together and have some social time together. And this wee video gives you a sense of what that's like.
Hello, I'm Alan McKnight. I'm one of the pastors here at Harper Church, and tonight is the Night of the Nations. Come and join us.
I had an amazing time dancing, singing, and just fellowshipping with everyone.
It was so fun. Met a lot of people today, which was so good as well.
Fantastic opportunity to get together, as I really enjoyed the company of every people.
It was great. I loved it. It was a wonderful time of fellowship.
So that's basically it. I mean, it's been frustrating. It's been difficult. It's been constant change. But it's also been joyful and wonderful and such a blessing. And again, it's just our story, but if any of it helps you, then that's great. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. That's great. Lucas Crelo from Sunbridge Road Mission in Bradford. The floor is yours, brother.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Lucas Coelho. I'm originally from Brazil. I've been in the UK for 9 years. I now live in Bradford, where I'm one of the pastors there. And I've been there just over 7 years. We are a very multicultural place. Basically, how I landed in Bradford is I moved from Brazil to the UK with the desire to serve in ministry. We knew, we had heard that faith was diminishing in Europe, that there was a massive need. So we kind of moved here. So we spent a year in London, not really knowing where God would take us. But eventually, he took us north and placed us in Bradford. And I joke that our church accidentally got it right. We had a pastor who had been there for 34 years, and he retired. He's still with us now, but he kind of hired me with his eldership team. I think he might have been thinking, he told me, like, Lucas, if you're coming here just because of my relationship with you, because we hit it off and things, you know, he's like, I'm going to leave in a year, you know, so there will be a new pastor coming in. So I don't know if that was part of his plans, like, if this all goes south, I'm out anyways, you know. So I'm the first international to be on staff as a pastor, and the church has 137 years. So that is a little bit how we started there. You can see the picture here. This is our eldership. So I'm from Brazil. We have now a guy from India. So we have 7 elders. There's another elder in training who is a British guy. We've approached like a Peruvian guy to be an elder. We have there are other Indian and Africans that we are thinking about bringing into the eldership. So we're still, like, we don't have all this right. Like, what I'm going to be sharing with you is how we've been integrating international or interculture into our leadership. So we are a very beginning stage. You know, we're not like really advanced in this, but God has been changing the church. God has been changing the church since I arrived, since I've known the church in 7 years, I've seen the change. So first things we notice is that we have been praying and God has been answering our prayers at times differently than our expectations. What do I mean by that? Like, for example, when I first came to Sunbridge and I kind of saw how things were, and I looked, just this week, I looked at an old picture, I think maybe the first, second year that I was there, and half of the seats were empty. It was mostly older people. There were some internationals, but like it was quite like a white congregation. And I remember the first weeks I was there, and I was praying, and I told my wife, and I said, look, I can't share this with anyone, but I'll share this with you. I said, God's going to do something in this church, you know, but he's either going to change us as a church, he's going to equip us, but if we don't move, if we don't allow him to do what he wants to do, he's going to bring people that will do it, you know. But God's been so kind that he has brought new people, but he also has moved our congregation along. And obviously change is hard. You know, it's easier for those bringing the change. For those that are in it for a long time and that seeing change, it can be difficult. And I've learned that change in a church is like turning a ship, not turning a race car. You know, you got to go slow. So we've seen change, and God has been answering. And we've been praying for help. We've been praying for families. We've been praying for growth. We've been praying for kids. And God has sent. But I think usually when we pray that as a British church, we think God's going to send British elders, British kids workers, British children. But actually, God is equipping our church with people from all over the place because that's what the city looks like, you know. And I think the fact that I'm on staff and people see an international as part of staff, I think that helps as well. People see, oh, there's a place for me here. Like our church has done a good job at welcoming people. Like I've always felt very welcome from the first day I stepped in there. And I also joke that like after our service, it looks, I call it the holy chaos, you know, because it's just, it's messy. Like there's cultures of everything and everybody looks different. It looks like a busy airport, but it's great. You know, like God's really shaping us. He's challenging us. He's growing our heart for one another, and we've been really learning. So this first picture here that you got, this was just this past Sunday evening. This guy's name is Yemi. He's from Nigeria, and he's joined us a few years ago, and he preached this Sunday, and he did a great job. You know, he preached really, really well. And it's just like the passion that he brings, the experience. You know, lots of times we have a tendency, and this is not like a British thing. I think this is just the dominant culture thing. Because a lot of people think, because I'm from Brazil, oh, I'm used to this. No, in Brazil, our churches are packed with Brazilians. There's not many intercultural people in the church. So this would be a challenge for us if that was happening there as well. So it's not a British thing. It's a dominant culture thing. So we tend to think that if someone is from a different culture, we automatically think that, oh, they're here, we need to help them. You know, oh, they're here, we need to teach them. Oh, they're here, like we are more spiritually mature because they don't speak English. Like we, unsubconscious, like, you know, like we are thinking that even in our actions. We think that we are there to teach. But like some news for us, like what are we going to teach an African about evangelism when it comes, like Nigerians, they're going out, you know, like South Korean church, Brazilian church, they're going out evangelizing all the time. They're bringing loads of people in. Like Brazilians that come to our church, they'll come 1 week, next week they're bringing a friend, you know. And it's just because their culture is like, I found something good, you need to be part of it, you know. So we can learn from that. Like that can really push us and shape us. So God is sending us mature Christians into the UK from all over the world who are ready to serve. So that's been our experience. Like, yes, we have people that are not mature Christians from other nations and that we are evangelizing, that we're teaching very basic things. But there's another end of the spectrum that we're actually receiving very mature Christians. So, for example, one of the guys who just joined our youth team, his name is Jitu. I actually don't have a picture of him here, but he's an Indian guy, and at first I was like, he wants to work with youth, like, will this click? It doesn't look like a youth person, you know, like, and I just kind of like, okay, I come along, and I kind of put him there, and I was like, well, he get on with the kids, you know, he sometimes can be very intense, you know, and very, like, really hardcore evangelistic, And then I was just like, let's see, you know. But then as I got to know him, like, he's led youth conferences of like 300 something kids. That's bigger than my church, than our church, you know what I mean? So I was like, wait a minute, this guy has something to share here. And then the more I got to know his heart, I was like, actually, that's exactly the kind of next thing we need. So if I was thinking of my youth team for today, I wouldn't need Jitu. But I'm thinking of my youth for tomorrow. How am I going to reach? In Brantford, we have loads of Pakistani people. We don't have any Pakistani family yet. How am I going to reach that people group without anyone that doesn't look, you know, someone that doesn't look like them, you know, doesn't speak, doesn't know their culture? So Jitu is already bringing other Indian kids. You know, there's a couple, two girls that are coming very faithfully. They're great, you know. So he's been pushing me in prayer, in different things, you know. So it's scary sometimes to push outside our comfort zone, you know. Yes, it'll be different. Yes, it'll challenge you. Yes, they're going to push you in areas that you didn't think. But that's what we need, you know. It'll push us towards growth. So God has been answering us with mature Christians from Africa, from Brazil, from India, from South America, like other areas in South America, from China, you know. Like, they're different Christians, Korea. This next picture is Tommy. This was a few weeks ago. He was preaching in the morning service. He's from Peru. He's married to a girl from Indonesia. They lead worship as well in our church. But his parents are Chinese. So him, his family is intercultural in itself, isn't it? And he's one that we'd love to have him as an elder, but it's just that at the moment in his work, it's extremely busy. They just had two babies. So it's not, maybe it's not the right timing, but he's definitely mature, a mature leader that we are investing in. He leads one of our growth groups. We can be inclined to think, like I mentioned, you know, that mature Christians, well, we can be inclined to look for mature Christians first within our own culture. So I'll share a little bit of this guy here. This is Sharon. He's one of our elders. He's from India. So Sharon is part of Pastor Matthew's growth group. Well, he was part of his growth group. And at the time, Pastor Matthew and Alice, his wife, they were looking for an assistant leader. And they're thinking, trying different things, and nothing clicked. And Alice just said, what about Sharon? And he's mature. He's very faithful. And then Pastor was like, yeah, why not Sharon, you know? So now Sharon is an elder. You know, they multiplied that group. Sharon leads a group himself. And Sharon, like, for example, he has limitations. He's not the best public speaker. He has a bit of a stutter, you know. But he does a podcast. You know, he pushes into things, and we're like, well done, Sharon. You know, he preaches at our church. You know, he's been such a help in the eldership, you know, because he has a different vision to things, different experiences. So the risk has paid off. So perhaps the help we're praying for doesn't look like us, has a different accent, may do things a little different, but that's who God is sending us. The thing that I want you to remember, too, from, I think, today, is that oftentimes we can speak so much about interculture that we think that interculture is the answer and interculture is the main thing. The only reason we are intercultural is because the world is intercultural, and that's what God's been bringing us. So, obviously, if there's nobody from another nation around me, it's not that I'm going to go, like, hunting for a Brazilian to put in my church, you know? It's like, you work with what God's given you. What we have to be open is that God may be sending mature Christians that, like a black person in a white church, or you know, a Brazilian somewhere else, or a South Korean. You know what I mean? Like, that's what he's doing, and he's bringing the world to us here in Britain. And we can evangelize, we can speak, we can share. We're getting to experience all this in our doorsteps. This next couple, this is a Brazilian couple. Her name is Jo. Well, a nickname is Jo. His name is Geraldo. Geraldo doesn't speak English, and they've been here, I think, 14 years or something. So it's like, how can you not have learned yet, you know? But he gets on without it, and he got comfortable that way. I keep pushing him to do that, and I tell him, look, Geraldo, not only are you missing out, but we are missing out because you're a mature Christian. You have lots to share. But we don't get that sometimes because you can't speak the language, you know. So I'm trying to encourage him in that. Jo speaks English, very broken, but she can communicate well. She has a strong accent, but it doesn't matter. And they're both in my growth group, And they come from about 50 minutes away, so they drive into Bradford. I think because of the community they found in the church, and the growth group has played a big part of that. So I asked Joe, I said, Joe, do you want to lead a discussion? I thought of Geraldo, but obviously he doesn't speak English, but would you like to lead discussions? He's like, yeah, I've led growth groups many years in Brazilian churches in Brazil and things, so I'll have a go, but like my English is not good. I said, don't worry, you do fine. And the first time she led, it was absolutely brilliant. Like, God really used her. And all the members in the group, they were like, wow, that was awesome. God used her so much. And now she's led a few other times, and every time has been really, really good. And she's actually the only woman in my growth group that has led discussion. All the other women don't really want to lead discussion. So that's set an example in that way as well. And there are other perks. For example, my birthday was in October. All the growth groups sent me emojis and happy birthday messages in WhatsApp. Jo showed up with an awesome chocolate cake that she baked. She knew that was my favorite cake, and loads of different sweets and treats. So they made like a party for me in the growth group that I wasn't expecting. So, investing people from other culture has really been a blessing for us. And this last one, his name is Roshan. He's also from India. He leads growth group as well. He preaches often and leads services as well for us. And he's one that we're looking into as well for eldership. Just to give you an idea from the Indian guys, for example, we have a few Indian families. And mainly that's to Sharon's credit. I think Sharon, he settled at our church. There's an Indian church that meets in Bradford that we're friends with. They meet in the evenings. So sometimes they'll go to both churches. But Sharon really settled with us, and that automatically ended up attracting other Indian families, mature Christians. So we're working with the Indian church. We're separate, but we're building a friendship with them as well. And these guys have really been a blessing. So the two girls that go to our youth, for you to have an idea, their father died just a few months back, and it was very sudden. Just a 51-year-old just was healthy, just suddenly had a heart attack and passed away. And they were just settling in our church when this happened. And these guys helped us tremendously in how to care for that family in that type of culture, along with the Indian church, you know, because they don't do things like we do in Britain, you know. We learned a lot through that, and God really built us up in that. So I guess I want to leave you with a question, is why can we find it difficult to allow Christians from other cultures to lead in our churches? You know, maybe we can have a moment at some point to talk about that. Why can we find it difficult to allow Christians from other cultures to lead in our churches? Thanks.
Debbie, do you want to move that down? Great.
Yep.
Debbie,
is that okay?
From Cornerstone Nottingham, all yours.
Yes, I've been a member of Cornerstone for 32 years, but I just should like to point out there is another, at least one other member of Cornerstone. David, would you give us a wave, please? David Devadison is one of our elders, and I think you were not born in the UK, am I correct? Yes. Anyway, talk to him later. So 32 years with Cornerstone, but 23 years of my life have been in full-time cross-cultural ministry, initially with Friends International and then with OMF. Now, Cornerstone has a long history of sending people overseas and welcoming international students. In early 2000, there was a time when a large number of Iranian asylum seekers came. So as long as I can remember, we've had a lot of nationalities, but in the past few years, something different has happened, which I think a lot of you have seen reflected, that the percentage of people who are not born in the UK or whose parents weren't born in the UK has been much greater in the church, and I love it. It's great. So today, I'd just like to share three examples of how three church members... They all happen to be Brits. They all happen to be women, but we won't reflect on that. But they're not the members. They're not the ministers. They are members who have done something or started something which God has blessed. And over the years, we've got to the point where the international people in that, or the people who are not British, are the ones, they're doing the ministry with us. We're not doing it for them, which is this, a difference that I think has been referred to already. So the initiatives were English language teaching, an international women's group, and the welcome of people from Hong Kong. So first the English language. Now they were, and my first type of person, you may have these people, you may have different types of people. So there were two ladies who had come to a time in their lives when they had a little bit more time. One was a part-time school teacher whose children had become teenagers and were more, looked after themselves more. And the other was someone who'd taken early retirement. And they were looking at the city and at the church, and they went off and got qualified to teach English language and got some help from somebody who was an English language teacher. They gathered a small team, they'd already got agreement from the leaders, and they started English language teaching. And this has been going on now for every week for 12 years, apart from, I think, during lockdown it went online. And the numbers has grown a lot, the number of students, we'll call them, since 2022, when a lot of people, as you know, a lot of people from Hong Kong started coming to the UK. And there's other nationalities there, you know, Russian, from the Middle East, from Iran, China, the different nationalities of the students. And each week, there's an optional, afterwards an optional Bible study, sort of evangelistic English teaching Bible study. And a lot of people from that, 25 people or so, to stay on. And a number of the people from Hong Kong who initially came along, Christians, who initially came along for English, they are now all part of this. They're welcoming people. They're running the tea and coffee. They are helping lead the small Bible study groups. And it's been interesting to see as well how some of those people from Hong Kong who are not that confident in their English are now on the welcome team on a Sunday morning. You'll walk in and there'll be somebody from Hong Kong, somebody from Iran, somebody from Nigeria and a Brit. And some of those people from Hong Kong are now really confident. And a lot of them are contributing and in many different ways to the church. So that's my first type of church member. The person who's at a different stage in life and has a bit of time and God's given a heart to respond to something. The second kind of person is a really busy person. Do you know these people who are so busy, you just don't understand how they can do what they do, but they just seem to have this capacity. They're total treasures. About 2008, one member had a real concern for the families of asylum seekers in the city. She's a GP. And at the same time, our former pastor's wife, Valerie Lewis, also had this bit of concern for some of the international women who were coming to the church. But they were having a tough time in this country. And also, they were coming on Sundays and maybe they were struggling to understand the sermon. So the two of them, they set up a monthly international women's group which met on a Sunday morning with Peter Lewis's blessing during the sermon. And they shared fellowship and a Bible study, usually on the subject of the previous week's sermon. And 17 years later, this group has about 30 meeting at the monthly meeting, but a bigger WhatsApp group of 100, who 60 of them all tried to meet at Chrissy's house recently. She's the GP lady. But there's mutual support going on there. But the leadership team, Chris calls this her dream team. She's still doing it because she just loves it so much, and she's so blessed by all these people. She has a Czech lady, a lady from China, and a Namibian. And they're the dream team. They're the leadership. And what, for example, so something they did recently, the Czech lady is recently, she's become a qualified counselor, and she's concerned about people who are losing people, bereavement. So the group had a discussion about bereavement one Sunday morning with all the different people talking about their experience in their culture. How do you respond to bereavement? And it was amazing blessing for everyone. So that was my second example, the sort of dynamic person who just is very busy, but God has just really given her this really need to reach out and do something. The third example is the returned missionary. Or it could be somebody who's lived overseas for many years and got to know a very different culture very well and can sort of automatically functions as a kind of go-between. And I count myself as that. I've not lived abroad, but I've spent a lot of my time with people from East Asia, a lot of time traveling there. And because I was there often, I would often come back through Hong Kong. And I grew a great love for the city and was very sad about what's been happening there. So when people from Hong Kong started coming to Nottingham, it was quite natural for me to be involved. And the first people I met, a couple of families, were through an OMF colleague from Hong Kong who was a missionary in Liverpool. And he introduced me to these people, and then when they arrived, we met, and they started coming to, they tried Cornerstone, and others came, and people started coming. And about 8 months later, it was approaching Lunar New Year, Chinese New Year. And one of the couples, I'll name them, that's okay, Edward and Leanne, were living on a new housing estate, and I was around at their house, and they said, you know, there's at least 20 houses on this estate that have people from Hong Kong that have just come from Hong Kong living in them. There are about six of them from our church, happens to be a very big church in Hong Kong, and some of them are coming to Cornerstone. But there's also others that we're trying to reach out to with the gospel. And we've been having this informal fellowship in our house. And anyway, so we got talking, we said, oh, wouldn't it be great to have a New Year's party? And we were just out of COVID, I think it was 2023 when we did this. So we put our heads together and had an afternoon party that were led by a group of people from Hong Kong. It was bilingual, English and Cantonese. And Edward was in the lead, and a lady from Hong Kong. Edward's wife and I, the lady from Hong Kong and I, were just in the beavering around in the background. And some of our church members from mainland China served the food and drinks, which was a very nice touch given the political situation. And they were able to invite some of the people who were not Christians to that party. So it went well, and people got to know each other. We got to know each other, and we teamed up again the following year with the international student team and did something, a Sunday service, which was trilingual, Cantonese, Mandarin, and English, led by Edward and me with some international songs and a lunch afterwards for a mixture of church members, international students, and people from Hong Kong. And shortly after that, a few months after that, Edward and Leanne sent me a message and saying, Debbie, can we come and see you about something? I have no official role in the church, right? But I was their go-between. That's the important thing. So they came along and said, look, we've been doing this unofficial fellowship group, and we really would like it to be under Cornerstone. We don't want to start another congregation. We just like to have a small group, and we have small groups. So I told them a bit about the background to the church, part of our history of when we had the Iranians, and said, I think you can go, you know, okay. You can go to that particular member of the leadership team and talk to them about this, and I think you're going to get a very warm response. But in the meantime, I'll get in touch with them as well, go between bit. And as a result, there is a Cantonese connect group, we call them in Cornerstone, not a separate fellowship. And all the people in that group contribute hugely to the life of our church in a lot of different ways. And indeed, it's wonderful. Edward is just become an elder. It was very evident from early meeting him that, you know, this was Edward was elder material. That was, you know, other people were saying that. So I've shared with you three examples of different kinds of local church members who've initiated something, got the lead, you know, they've got an idea and got the leadership's approval and run with it. The people who find they have a bit more time in life and want to do something. The person who's really, really busy, but God has just given her just a heart and then a partner in the, somebody else to work with. And then the returned missionary type of person. And it's the relationships and the activities that God has blessed our church so much by enabling people who've moved to the UK to get involved, feel at home, start serving and sharing in the leadership. That's the thing that they're initiating as well. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Debbie, and thank you, Alan and Lucas and Tim, for your overview at the beginning. I hope what you've heard there is three different stories of how intercultural ministry is happening in three different FYEC churches. So we've seen Glasgow's community change, so the church adapted, as Alan described. We've seen Sunbridge receiving mature Christians from around the world and integrating them into leadership. Debbie's told us of how ordinary church members are impacting those from other cultures with the gospel. So I hope there's something you can take from that into your own situations. We've time for some questions. I've got to go a minute in AGM at some point, but we've got a few minutes. So if there are any questions for all our contributors, do you want to come up so you can jump up to the microphone to answer? Because if you've got a question for somebody specifically, I'll bring the microphone round and let's do that for a couple of minutes. So anyone got a question for anybody? Hello.
Good afternoon, Nigel Buckley from Emmanuel Church in Lethwich. We've got a church fellowship of about 120, 130 on a Sunday morning. In the last 5 years, we've seen an increasing number of non-white, non-UK people coming along, which is fantastic. The leadership team and a small number of others are quite aware of how to engage or trying hard to engage, but maybe the majority of the congregation haven't really seen that. Have you got any advice on how to motivate most of the congregation to actually start to integrate with other people?
Who wants to come in on that?
Thinking of our own experience, it wasn't really a problem in a sense that there was a good welcome from the beginning. I think I would say that over a 10-year period, there was maybe only one or two folks that moved on, mainly because they wanted to be in a different kind of church. And the people in the congregation really were friendly and made space and wanted to connect with them. So we didn't really have the trouble of trying to get people to respond in that way. Perhaps that was because we'd done some of that earlier work and thinking through what our values were, so that there was a common understanding that we wanted to be change and reach into diverse communities. And that perhaps laid the foundation for people being ready for that. Perhaps if it happens and you're not quite ready for it, then there is that. How do we handle this?
Brendan at Grace Church in Cambridge. Question for the panel, but also for everybody else. I'm just curious, how many of us are using Breeze Translate for live AI translation? Five or so of us. If you're not aware of it, it's live AI translation. BreezeTranslate.com, and I highly recommend it. It's for us, it's £6 a week right now, and we've got five tablets that have got it preloaded. We hand them out to our two current Iranian visitors, Chinese visitors, Japanese visitors. It takes the feed from the audio that the church uses, sends it off, transcribes it into English first, and then translates it into any language of their choice, up to about 150 common languages. So it just means that people can access the service and the sermon, not the songs yet, but they're getting something. And is it fully accurate? No, but it's something, and we've been finding it really helpful. So I'd encourage you to look that up if you're interested in trying that.
Question for Lucas, please. How long did you take to bring some of these folks into leadership? Did it depend on the individual and their skills, or did you just follow a set program th- that the church uses all the time?
Yeah, that's a good question. We talked about this as an eldership. Obviously, we didn't want to. We didn't want like, oh, we need a black guy. You know, we need. we're looking at maturity in their lives. So what we've put in place, we put in the eldership, we put a elder in training, a trial of 3 months. So that gives that person an idea what that is. So there's a British guy now who is in that trial. Sharon went through that trial. So that gives us an idea of how they react. If this is for them, they can also think, like, do I want this responsibility kind of thing? And they kind of attend all the meetings. They can get trained, you know. They do everything as an elder would do, except for voting. So that's really helped. With other ministry leaders, we put them through our recruitment process. I think one of the questions that we always get, you know, our pastor would always raise this, is like, oh, with the Nigerian guys, for example, yeah, but I just don't know where their theology is yet. And, you know, and sometimes we can worry so much about these risks and not give it a go, right? So when Joe led the growth group, I had no idea how that would go, but I'm present. You know, if something goes off, I can put it in place, right? I had a negative experience with our youth team one time. I wanted them to read a book to get the kids to do, like, devotion. And they're like, oh, I don't know about this author, that, what about this, and all this stuff. Ended up, we didn't do any books, you know? So what was worse? It would have been better for them to read. I had read the book, you know? Trust me, I know what I'm doing. And it would have been fine. And if something's off, we can help put in place, you know? So I think we can worry so much about other things, and that can hinder us or cripple us from actually trying, you know? So.
Hi, thank you. So I'm in a context that's very white, rural, not much diversity at all. There's been in recent years some folks coming in. We had an influx from Ukraine at one point, and now more Nigerians coming to work in care homes and things. And if anything, our church is more diverse than the area, which is still not very, but more so. And so we're making that adjustment. The town isn't, but we are, if you know what I mean. And it's trying to, I suppose, echoing the question before about how you get the white majority to engage. If anything, our issue is getting the Nigerians to not just go, oh great, other Nigerians, and just chat, how you encouraging genuine cross-cultural stuff, just on the fellowship level, not just serving. But do you see my question?
I think from our perspective, that's an ongoing battle, you know. So on a Sunday, I'll look out across the church when coffee's going on, and you'll see a wee knot of West Africans, a wee knot of Indians, Pakistanis, the Latin Americans. But you'll also see crossover people who have managed to navigate between the various groups. And I think it's about identifying them, encouraging them, and just trying to encourage more of them. But I don't think it's a 5-minute fix. You know, I think it's something that happens over years. And then, you know, you intentionally yourself making friendships across those cultures and modelling that as well. But it's a slow thing. People like to be with people that are like them the world over, you know, so it's a slow journey to seeing that happen more effectively.
Yeah. And that's fine that people want to be with their family. So we need to make space for both and make it a value that not all the time are we being with ourselves or demanding that we feel comfortable. We're intentionally putting ourselves in place of discomfort to bring blessing to others and to be blessed by others. If you keep saying that, it starts to sink in.
I just wanted to say something I've come across in relation to Nigerians. If there are any Nigerians here, maybe you could talk to me afterwards and say what you think. My understanding is that some cultures can be much more hospitable than British culture is. And one thing that may be different is that we are, some Brits, quite used to inviting people around to our houses for dinner. It's a certain class thing as well. But in some countries, and Nigeria I think is one, honor is bestowed by visiting someone, not by extending the invitation. And so if there are one or two people in a church, locals, who are willing to understand a bit about that, maybe go out on a limb by visiting people, or maybe if they haven't seen them at church for a couple of weeks, by just popping out and visiting and getting to knowing, could pay off, could be well received.
Thank you. Is there perhaps one more before we wrap up? If there's not, that's okay. Good. Well, he's just come in. I was about to close off and he just got there.
We go to a church that's got a lot of different nationalities as well more recently. Have you got any wisdom on how to help churches, people from different cultures who don't feel confident in English? And I think one of you mentioned it. Just what steps you took to enable them just to have a go and lower the bar, make it easier? Have you got any examples or help on that, please?
Yeah, I think a lot of times the speaker is a lot more self-conscious than the hearers. I found that people are usually pretty gracious in trying to understand and things. Obviously, we have to use some common sense, right? So, for example, there are people that I was like, okay, their English is just not good enough for them to be leading from the front. So maybe it's not time yet. But I guess we can hear them in discussion, small groups help, you know. I think with time that confidence builds. But obviously we can't put someone that can't put a full sentence together to teach, you know. So that limitation is real. And I think just to comment on some of the questions that were asked in how to chat with people, that kind of thing, I've noticed that a lot of times people are scared of just going across to say hello. So Sunbridge, like we're not a very confident church in the beginning, just the people in that the city has low self-esteem. So I remember when I first arrived, I would speak to people, they'd be looking at the floor. You know, my wife was like, they don't even look me in the eye, what's going on? And then we've realized that it was the region, you know, and then we had to kind of build people up, build confidence. And to answer your question about the group thing, what I tell the Brazilians, there's a lot of families that come into church, and because they know there's a Brazilian pastor, they think it's a Brazilian church. So I automatically tell them, like, we're not a Brazilian church, we're a multicultural church, trying to be intercultural, but obviously we're an English church. So I'll give you the same attention. I'm not your pastor only, you know, like I'm everyone's pastor. So obviously we're going to have an affinity because we're Brazilians. But one of the things we have to be careful about, if we huddle as a Brazilian group and we're speaking Portuguese in a circle, we automatically exclude everybody else. And people are already nervous enough to come to say hello. And if you hear them speaking another language, they don't want me here. You know, so we have to be really careful of that. Like, we're going to see each other. We're Brazilians. We're going to see each other. We're going to, you know, so we can chat afterwards. But let's be intentional. So maybe that's what you can tell the group, you know, be intentional into welcoming everybody else, to getting to know someone you don't know yet, that kind of thing. So I think intentionality helps in that.
Brothers, sisters, time is gone. Can we thank our panel? That would be great.